All right. Okay, well, thank you, and happy Canada Day, I guess. I'm going to tell you about something which has a lot of buzzwords in it that have been very popular in the last couple of years. So I'm going to have many body localization and SPTs, symmetry protected topological phases. Quantum computing has gone a little out of fashion, it seems, but it's going to be in there. And no holography. So if you guys are looking for ADS or anything like that, I'm afraid you won't get it at this talk. Sorry. So this is joint work with Norm Yao and Ashwin that we've just been doing in the last year. And it builds on some ideas from a couple years ago with Anusha, who's here, and Shivaji, and some of Ashwin's group. Okay, so let me start with a slightly unusual perspective on what is many-body localization, because I'm interested in building gates out of systems or building qubits out of systems rather than thinking about phases in this talk. So this is also, the other buzzword, entanglement. That's also why I introduced it this way. So information is lost via entanglement. So this is a set of interacting qubits. Those are microscopic degrees of freedom. And we can imagine that qubits carry quantum information. And then they interact. And when they interact, they get entangled with their neighbors. And that is sort of mostly, for most purposes, if this is strongly interacting, complicated environment, this is an irreversible process. And what it leads to is the irreversible loss of that local information that I might have wanted to encode in the qubit. So if the system is clean, or sort of typical, it doesn't even have to be completely clean, then this entanglement, this spreading of entanglement, or spreading of the local quantum information, proceeds essentially ballistically, which is really fast. That's bad if you want to build a coherent device. Whereas many-body localization prevents the spreading of entanglement. So you can kind of view localization in this context as localizing some abstract notion of quantum information. That's what we want it to do for us. That's the spirit of this, okay? Rather than charge or other more typical quantities that people have thought about before. So let me show you what's now become sort of a classic plot in the field of many-body localization. This is the entanglement entropy growing as a function of time after a quench from an initial product state in a system of interacting spins on a line. So this is actually a cut through a line at the halfway point, I think. And as a function of time, this entanglement grows. And the thing that I mostly want you to take away from this picture is that it grows very slowly. That is that the x-axis down here is logarithmic, right? This is for a strongly disordered system, so this is when many-body localization happens. Just for reference, by what do I mean by slowly, this is a hand-waving calculation, if you did the same thing without the disorder, that's what would happen to the entanglement. It would grow very, very rapidly and shoot through the top of the plot. So this is the property that we are going to want to try to exploit. A sort of more statistical mechanical view, just to back up and give you a slightly more typical view of many-body localization, is that many-body localization corresponds to the breakdown of equilibrium statistical mechanics for isolated systems. So what do I mean by that? If I had a traditional or an ergodic system, so an isolated dynamical system, which is ergodic, the meaning of that word ergodic is that essentially the system equilibrates itself. It acts as its own heat bath in this picture. And what that means, in particular for us, again, is that subsystems forget their local initial conditions because they come to equilibrium after some amount of time. Whereas localized systems, in the presence of strong disorder or just localized for some other reason, aren't ergodic. And that, again, suggests that maybe we can build a coherent device out of the pieces. Okay. The other consequence of this breakdown of statistical mechanics of equilibration is that most of the lore of statistical mechanics doesn't need to apply to a many body to apply system. So in particular, as was discussed a few years ago by this group at the bottom, you can have a quantum orders, what we normally view as orders that are confined to ground states of quantum systems, extend to higher energy density or higher temperature states of those same systems, which would normally be disallowed by Merman-Wagner type arguments in equilibrium. So you can have this picture is a picture of a Haldane chain, which we'll come back to in a minute, with edge qubits, and so this is an SPT order, and the argument would be that this can actually persist above a ground state order to higher energy density. So there are a lot of questions about many-body localization. This is a slide from Norm, and this is only a small subset of them. Actually, probably the zeroth question is, does it really exist? And the first question that one should do to try to answer that is actually probably, can one experimentally observe it? Because the theory doesn't seem to be very good at addressing that question of does it exist? And there are quite a few groups in sort of the quantum optics world which are trying to do that. Nobody really, I think, is compelled by those experiments quite yet. What are the signatures? How does one measure it? Maybe to help that experimental thing. And then there's a lot of sort of more theoretical questions right now, which lots of people are working on nature of the phase transition, what's the role of dimensionality, what's the role of symmetries, can you have it without disorder? Various people in this room have worked on some of these topics before. And then there's a question at the bottom, which is, can you use it? And I actually wanted to be a little more specific. Can you use it for quantum computing? And that's what I'll talk about for the rest of the talk. So just looking at this picture, you might say, well, yeah, so MBL, many-body localization, reduces the rate of entanglement spreading. So this red qubit in the middle there, instead of getting entangled very quickly and sort of losing all of its knowledge of its initial conditions and its information, actually can sit there for a long time, because you've slowed down all this entanglement spreading. But the thing is that finding a qubit is a mess, because there's nothing special about the red qubit in a general system of interacting degrees of freedom. So how do you find the one which actually you can locally address and keep interacting with? A little bit more technically, maybe that's, for those of you who know, that's can you actually find the local integrals of motion which are the dressed qubits in this many-body localized system? But basically, the problem is that in this mess, all these qubits do interact. They all get dressed a bit by each other. You kind of lose track of which one's which, and nobody's special, right? So what we want to do is we want to find a qubit which is special so that we know where it is and we know how to interact with it, even once the system is sort of very complicated and disordered. And so how do we find an addressable special qubit? And here's where the other buzzword in the talk comes in. Well, there are special degrees of freedom at the boundary of topological phases in general, and in 1D, symmetry-protected topological phases. And again, here's a picture of the Haldane phase. Well, this is an AKLT chain version of it, with two boundary qubits. This idea is sort of the key for us, is that we will know where the qubits are that we're going to try to use, because they're bound to the boundary of some region. Okay?
Just a question. When you say it's finding a qubit is a mess, it's there in the sense that you believe it's local integral motion exists. So if I take a spin, we spread it out a bit, that sort of.
It sort of works, but it would be, it's really hard to actually find those local integrals of motion in the middle of something.
Right.
So here the idea is that we're going to know much better where they are, and they're going to actually also, these particular ones and maybe this motivation doesn't make it clear, these particular ones are going to actually have even less, be even more coherent than anything in the bulk, right? So it's two things. One is sort of knowing how to find it, how to get good operators for it, and the other is actually that because these are SPT qubits, they don't interact with the bulk very well, and that makes them much more coherent, as we'll see. So let me just back off. I'm going to get rid of disorder for the next few minutes of my talk and tell you about this model that we're going to look at, which is an SPT, a model for an SPT phase, which is just a model for the Haldane phase. So let me walk you through this sort of paradigmatic example for 1D SPTs. So this is a Hamiltonian for a qubit chain. It has one body, two body, and three body terms, which are local. It has a Z2 cross Z2 symmetry, which is generated by Ising reversal on either the even or odd sublattice of the system. And for small v, not zero, but small, there are two phases. So if this lambda, this three-body term, dominates, then this is in an SPT insulator phase. This is the Haldane phase, and that's the one that will have the edge qubits. And if the H term dominates, just the field term, then actually it'll put it into a trivial insulating phase. Okay. So I suppose I'm supposed to say these things. I'm just kind of assuming that this audience now knows at the end of an entanglement workshop what MBL and SPT and things like that are. But just to be clear, if the symmetry, this G symmetry, were explicitly broken, then there's no phase transition necessary between these insulators. They're actually both short-range entangled. They have no fractionalization, nothing fancy in the bulk. But if the symmetry is there, then you do need a phase transition between them. And if there's a spatial transition, a domain wall between them, then you bind a qubit. Okay, that's the edge mode associated with this SPT phase. So the boundary hosts a single qubit degree of freedom. There it is. Okay. So
in that SPT phase, it's the state that you showed us in the previous slide.
In the SPT phase, it's... Yeah, these. Yeah, I just don't have any more insulator over here. A trivial insulator is also vacuum. But when you... Actually, that's an interesting comment. Trivial insulator is not also a vacuum. It is at zero temperature. But at high temperature, there's a difference if there's degrees of freedom that you can keep talking to on your left versus really no degrees of freedom at all. Which is important. And that's actually why I've drawn it this way. I'm focusing on a half cut where I really have degrees of freedom on both sides, so I'm not helping myself by throwing out half of them. Okay. So what does it mean that it's a boundary qubit? Well, the simplest or sort of common answer is that there's a ground state degeneracy with local operators that address it. So here are these are microscopic operators. These are at special points in the phase diagram of that Hamiltonian. They get dressed in general, but let's not worry about that for most of the talk. These are local spin operators, which form a Pauli algebra and define and act on a ground state, a twofold ground state degeneracy of this system. Okay. But what I want to do is I want to operationalize this notion of a boundary qubit in a more dynamical setting where I don't necessarily need to sit at zero temperature and have completely initialized my whole system and know everything. Okay? So there are two things that I can ask of a qubit. Well, there's one thing I can ask of a qubit, another thing I can ask of a controllable qubit or a boundary qubit. One of them is that it store quantum information for me, so I'd like the qubit to be decoupled from the bulk, and I can operationalize that by defining a protocol, which is say, measure the qubit, that essentially is a way to initialize it, then time evolve, and then measure it again and see that it still remembers how you initialized it. So the measurement at the beginning and the end should agree. Okay? It's telling me that the qubit is coherent. I can operationalize the notion that it's a boundary qubit by trying to see whether the qubit really can move with the boundary and the quantum information can be recovered. So one way to do that is to think, okay, measure the qubit, that initializes it, then move the boundary between the phases. This is kind of analogous to proposals about 1D Majorana wires and moving superconductivity around in order to drag those edge fermions around. Similar idea, move the boundary between the phases, hold the edge qubit for a while at the new location, move the boundary back, and measure the qubit. And can you recover what you've started with? Can you recover coherence even once you move things around? Okay?
What are sigma naught and sigma 1? Is that important?
Oh, I'm sorry. So 0 and 1 are, so the there's an infinite chain in both directions, and I put the boundary at 0. And so the trivial insulator, I haven't drawn spins in it, but the trivial insulator is the negative side, so those are just positions. The positive, the SPT insulator starts at 0, then 1, and so on. So yeah, sorry. These are just the, literally the microscopic spin variables at the boundary.
Sorry, just a slightly confused about that. This these three sigma operators, so they they have the commutation relations of just a spin 1/2.
Like, that's right.
But so you write that down independent of the state that you discuss. So I would have thought in a typical equilibrium SPT situation, we would say that there's a low energy manifold which has a for which there would be a kind of well-defined boundary spin. But some states wouldn't have that. I go high enough in energy, you don't have that.
Right.
Is this some statement that this thing for your particular model actually commutes with the Hamiltonian?
Well, so of course, at H and V are zero, these will commute with the Hamiltonian. Okay, but that's a trivial statement. What I'm saying is that, and actually that's where I wrote these down. So at t equals zero, if h and v are non-zero, these get dressed. Okay, and it's hard to calculate the exact dressing with v, though it's more straightforward with h, but that's okay. Indeed, if you just had this clean system, you took it to high energy or finite temperature, you don't really expect that these things will be particularly useful operators. So they're there. You could measure them and thus say that that piece of the system in this high temperature state is initialized in some way, but of course it'll immediately decohere. And what I will show over the course of the talk is that actually, well, in various contexts, sort of parsing that apart, you can use these or the dressed versions of these even at infinite temperature, even when you have no idea what the rest of the system is doing, and they will remain coherent for a long time, okay, with disorder. It won't happen when there's no disorder. So that's why the localization plays an important role. So I'm extending these ideas, which start at zero temperature, and I'm going to try to walk you through how I get them all the way up to high temperature to be able to use them as something I can coherently interact with lasers or something like that. So one thing I should say is that, and actually maybe this is a good moment to say it, I'm operationalizing this in a dynamical setting, and I'm partly thinking of, okay, where are you going to build these kinds of things or study this kind of physics, use these qubits? It's going to be probably in a quantum optical type of experiment with something like cold atoms, where it's much easier to engineer the Hamiltonian than it is to initialize the state of the system. Because you can turn on lasers and basically in rotating waves, you can turn on effective Hamiltonians. That's pretty straightforward. It's often really hard to completely control the initial conditions of the state. That means that you've pumped all the heat out. And you have to pump the heat out in a rotating frame. And it's not always easy to do. So the idea here is that we want to be able to use these having a Hamiltonian which has these dynamical properties of the SPT versus trivial, but not actually needing to cool it to start. What I was about to say was that this common answer, that there's a ground state degeneracy or low temperature manifold with local operators that act on it, actually basically, for this case, implies these two protocols will work. And that's straightforward. So in terms of storage, I have this is now a many-body energy spectrum, and the point is that I have two states, which are degenerate. They're exponentially degenerate in a finite system, but they're degenerate in the semi-infinite systems. And then a many-body gap up to some continuum of excitation states. And if I can, say, measure one of these operators that will project this into a particular state in this two-dimensional space, and then there's no splitting, I'm assuming the system's isolated, there's no splitting, so this qubit is just perfectly coherent. It just stays wherever you stick it, right? And in terms of that dynamical protocol of dragging the boundary and bringing it back, I'm protected by just the fact that if I have some coupling, which is what I'm going to do to shift the boundary where the trivial to SPT is, so turn up the lambdas versus the h's locally, I can do it in any sort of reasonable way, never closing the gap above this state, above this pair of states. And so if I just sort of tune that coupling, say, to ramp over, ramp this, say, this way and back, by turning this coupling, say, from over there to over here and back, nothing will happen if I do it slower than that gap. I'm protected by the adiabatic theorem. Okay, good. So that tells me that if I have a clean system at zero temperature, my qubit, this boundary qubit, can both store and shuttle and remain coherent. Okay? So this table that I put here is going to organize the bulk of the talk. I'm just going to fill in boxes for what works and what doesn't as I complicate my life, okay, at finite temperature. So basically, when again, by temperature here, what I just mean is that I don't initialize, or say it's infinite temperature, means I pick a random initial state for the full system, but I'm going to do dynamics where I only interact with this local degree of freedom, these capital sigmas, or the nearby operators. So in order to do this analysis, it's quite useful to Fermionize the model. And that's actually how I can make this distinction in the next two lines of the table between non-interacting and interacting. Because we'll be able to understand pretty much all of these protocols in detail in the non-interacting case, and then, you know, mostly numerically check how they work in the interacting case. So Fermionizing this SPT model is relatively straightforward. So this is a transformation of the spins into pairs of Majorana fermions. This is a Jordan-Wigner transformation, but it's a real Jordan-Wigner transformation in the sense that I'm just using real fermion operators instead of C's and C daggers that are complex. And the main thing to see here is, okay, a couple of things. So each site splits into two Majorana fermion sites. The Hamiltonian, the lambda term, which was this three-body term, actually becomes a next neighbor hop in the fermion language. The H term is a nearest neighbor hop. And the V term is the interaction. This is a quartic term in this fermion model. And the Z2 cross Z2 symmetry actually is, if you look at this model, you see that there's actually two essentially hopping chains. These lines indicate the terms. I can point at them. So this is a lambda term, and that's an H term, lambda H, lambda H, just like up here. And as hopping chains, especially if V is zero, this is very clear, that's all the terms in the system. And so there's just two decoupled chains, and the Z2 cross Z2 symmetry is just the two parities of those two chains, fermion parity. So good. So when I do this, this is a Jordan-Wigner transformation. In general, I will pick up Jordan-Wigner strings for operators which don't respect or are odd under the Z2 cross Z2 symmetry. Okay? So those strings are important. Here they are. So my modes, my boundary qubit operators, this sigma x operator, has a string. This is a product of all of the fermions off to the left, times just one fermion here, here gamma 1, 1, so it's all of these. That's a zero mode of this staggered Majorana chain. And then there's a Wigner string. And there's a similar string on the sigma z, all the way from over there, to this serum mode here, which is in a triangle, and the sigma y, which is a product, the two strings cancel. Okay. But actually, already looking at this, you can kind of see that if I set V to 0, the non-interacting case, then I expect storage to work just fine. I haven't made a slide to indicate it. I'll just explain it. Because basically, these two things here are Majorana zero modes of these hopping chains, which are just hopping chains now. They're just decoupled. So under time evolution, they don't change because they're zero modes. And the strings also, this string is essentially a product of every fermion to the left of the cut. And under time evolution, that string also remains invariant. The parity doesn't sort of sneak across the cut in the non-interacting model.
I'm confused by something very basic here. So actually, the twofold generation of the boundary comes from filling and unfilling of the fermion zero mode. Is that right?
In this language, yeah, there's two zero modes.
Yeah, right. So, but then these two states will have opposite fermion parity. But for hot end phase, I would expect the boundary actually have the same fermion parity, but they are different in other ways.
You can fermionize, I don't know, you can fermionize Haldane. This is a staggered version of the Haldane phase.
Yeah, these two states have different fermion parity, I just feel.
Well, actually, no. So the SP, actually, I don't agree. So the these are protected in the SPT language before I fermionized. These are stable qubits. They don't show up in the Hamiltonian directly. Or they form a Pauli algebra that commutes with it, in some sense because they actually are odd under the Z2 cross Z2 symmetry, which means that they, once you fermionize, they change the parity.
Sorry, does Z2 cross Z2 change fermion parity at all? Or?
The operators...
Does fermion parity change under the Z2 cross Z2 transformation? Or not?
Well, fermion parity is that Z2 cross Z2 transformation.
Fermion parity is only Z2, it's not Z2 cross Z2. Oh, you have two
chains. Two chains. So, right. Yeah, no. These definitely change fermion parity. And that's actually in the fermion language. That's, in some sense, why they... I mean, I view it as this is the reason that Jordan-Wigner works, actually, is that you have this Z2 symmetry, which allows you to transform. Your Hamiltonian will have terms. Any term which is local and even under this symmetry will remain local after the transformation. And if it's odd, it picks up a string.
Yeah, I don't know whether this makes sense. But so it looks like the twofold generation, one state is a boson, the other state is a fermion. I'm confused by something very basic. It just seems different from ordinary Hold F, where the two states are two spin and a half states. They're both bosons. But here it looks like one state is a boson, the other is a fermion. So maybe just a...
I don't know. I'm not sure if I quite understand. But we can talk about it after. So one thing which you can also see immediately from sort of this picture and why this shuttling might be harder, even for the non-interacting model, is that there are these strings. And somehow you don't want the strings to disperse and carry away your quantum information while you're doing some operation. So when I just hold the Hamiltonian fixed, and it's non-interacting, this works just fine. But to get some, I don't know, let me see. You know, I don't want my string to escape. That's what could carry away quantum information in this language. Okay? So what do I mean by that? How could the string escape? So here is, say, let's just focus on one of the two zero modes associated with this boundary qubit. Here's one of them. The operator actually, here it is. Here's the operator, sigma z. Has this zero mode, and then it has this string. So here I've indicated the string by a string. And there's a triangle, right, to indicate the qubit. If I were to ramp down, or ramp this coupling, this pair of couplings, to make them stronger, I'm going to shift the boundary over to here. Okay? And as I do that, the zero mode will actually just get dragged along. And that's protected by the non-interacting gap. I can go adiabatically with respect to that gap, and it's no problem. That zero mode will go from here to here. But, okay, the string is kind of weird. What essentially has happened is that these two operators, which were part of the string, are now on the wrong side. they're now in the bulk of the other phase. They're on the bulk of this SPT side instead of being on the trivial side of that boundary. And so as time evolves, those modes disperse into the bulk. Okay? And that causes decoherence if the occupation of these modes, which are dispersing away into the bulk, is random. Okay? So essentially, at zero temperature, that occupation is not random, and this string disperses away, it doesn't matter. And this had to work because we knew that at zero temperature, we didn't have to invoke non-interacting physics. We were protected by a many-body gap and a many-body picture. But at finite temperature, if I think about how I'd evaluate the correlation functions that go into this, this piece of string escaping actually is going to decohere the quantum information that I can measure when I look back at my local observables. It really escapes off into the bulk of the phase. And I can verify that intuition just numerically. So let me explain this plot. This dashed black line is just the time profile of how I'm ramping these couplings. So to be able to compare like with like, it is easiest, as I mentioned in my initial protocol, to sort of shift the boundary, hold for a little bit, and then shift back. And then these red, green, and blue curves are the XX, YY, ZZ measurement. So I measure in the X direction, that initializes it in the X direction, and then I wait, and I look for recovery. So if this were to work, then all of these curves would come back to 100%. This is, literally measuring sort of the trace fidelity, the coherence of this qubit at infinite temperature, okay? As determined by numerical, time-dependent Schrodinger equation evolution.
Before we go on, I keep having to ask dumb questions because I'm still struggling with these sigmas. But are you going to tell us kind of how you construct the sigmas for a more generic model? Or you kind of knew what operators to use here?
We did know. So we've checked it in this model and we've checked it with interactions and so on. But the hope of generalization would be that you could take essentially the zero temperature operators.
But I don't even see why the zero temperature operator is unique. I mean, so I have a ground state, which is doubly degenerate, some Hamiltonian chain, okay, which depends on parameters. If it's AKLT, it's something.
Sure.
If it's really Heisenberg, it's something else. And I know the ground state is doubly degenerate, so I can define some operator which acts like a spin 1/2 within that ground state manifold, but does different things to the higher excited states. And there could be many such operators that projected to the ground state manifold behave exactly the same way. So how do I know which one to use? I don't see how it should be unique. Take some special kind of basically integrable model where there's some maybe natural choice.
It's a good question. So my
what's the right choice for the spin 1 Heisenberg chain, for example?
Right. So my reaction here is that the right choice is actually, okay, so it's two things. You want the most local thing. It's, again, it's where you know what to do. If I can, in fact, do all of these numerics using the stupidest choice, which was the exactly solvable point, the exactly solvable choice. And there is an order one overlap between those operators and the actual dressed operators of the zero temperature case that would be, adiabatically connected to the special point. And this isn't an example where recovery works, but even in cases where recovery works, we don't expect to get perfect recovery because of that initial mismatch. But we do have a strong overlap with a very local set of operators that we can use. That's actually really important because we want to be able to implement it on, say, 2 qubits. So if I took, these are 2-qubit operators. So if I, what I would hope, but I don't know that I can prove it, would be that I could take sort of the most local projection of the boundary operators that act on this ground state space. You're there. and be able to use them and take that as an operational definition that I could carry over to places where I don't know. I'm not very close to an integrable point. I agree. Here we totally used an integrable point.
Imagine I did the spin one chain.
Yeah.
I might imagine just using the operator, which is just a spin operator at the end of the chain. S plus, if there is a spin 1/2, it'll flip it, I guess. Will that work?
Yeah, I don't know. It might. I mean, it might not be the one that gets you the best order one overlaps for your...
See why it would work. I'm confused.
But to some extent, it doesn't matter which of those, as long as...
You're right. I think it probably would be okay. But it may not be the best one, but it would probably be okay. So long as you're comfortable with, you know, in your initial step, you'll only ever be able to get a recovery to here or something like that. Right? And that would be a good one because it's super local.
But as long as your operator acts correctly within that degenerate subspace, it doesn't matter what it does to the rest of the order state.
There's no projection into the ground state here or to zero temperature. This is just an infinite temperature average. You're right. I think the big question in MBL in some sense is how do you actually get these local intervals of motion in Pauli algebra and really know that they work all the way through the spectrum? I can't prove anything about it. So what we've shown by analyzing special points and then pushing on numerics is that you can move significantly away from the special points. You can use the simple operators and actually get exponential enhancements of coherence and you know, other nice properties. But I would like to say that you could take the more general thing, which is just sort of pick the most local set of operators you can that act on your space, and those would work as well, up to some order one cut in how well they match with the perfect ones. But that's using MBL lore rather than anything we can prove about integrals of motion existing, being dressed in some way. So let me just point out here that this basically doesn't recover. The extent to which it does recover is because this is a finite chain, and we went slowly enough that you begin to get a little bit of recovery from just resolving mini gaps. And I won't show you the numerics, but you can vary L and see that indeed this will totally die as L gets longer. So you can't do this shuttling, even in the non-interacting case, in the clean system, using these operators. And in some sense, it's because they just do all kinds of crap up in the high part of the Hilbert space, right? Right. So this is, I think, an important distinction. It's showing you that shuttling already doesn't work in the non-interacting case. I'm now going to turn on interactions. And things will get much worse, okay, not surprisingly. So here I have to just turn to essentially numerics to really know what's going on at infinite temperature in the interacting case. So let's look at storage. And this plot is bad, so it's the same thing. This is just storage. This is trace fidelity of these crazy operators as a function of time. And what you see is that there's just a decay. It looks noisy down here. But there's just a decay which goes as, lambda over v squared. So v is the interaction. And when you turn it on, v's just decay. So the storage stops working. And what's important here is that this is order one. This doesn't depend on system size. It just dies. Okay. And, right. So we interpret this, and you can kind of calculate something about it, but it's hard, as being that the bulk excitations, which are randomly in this high temperature initial state, are scattering on the edge qubit, decohering it, doing all kinds of rubbish to it, and they do that basically immediately. They don't care about how big the system is because they're, you know, some order one distance away, and they scatter as soon as they're there. Good. So that already takes out two of the boxes. If I can't store coherently, I certainly can't shuttle. Okay, no problem. So everything fails, unsurprising. Now, of course, I wouldn't give the talk if there weren't some way to turn around the X's in the bottom row. And so we're going to recover, actually, both of these properties with disorder. So, you know, this is MBL to the rescue. We have, all I'm doing is I'm going to take the same model, but I'm going to introduce disorder in all of the parameters, just local disorder in all the parameters. And if we're lucky, we'll put enough disorder in that we break Merman-Wagner, we get a many-body localized system. Of course, at V equals zero, this is a fermionizable or quadratic system of fermions, so we really expect localization just to sort of work once we disorder it. But even with the interactions, what we would hope is that we can extend the ground state properties up to finite energy density or even infinite temperature, and have, you know, the SPT qubit well-defined all the way up, okay? So the idea that you could extend SPT order to finite temperature and have some kind of boundary qubit and various other properties of it, like string order parameters and things like that, was explored in these two papers down here a year or two ago. One of the things which Ashwin's group did nicely was really look at the coherence of this edge qubit as a function of system size, and we, you know, checked and reproduced in a slightly different model that it really does work. So that T2, so the decoherence, this is just storage. So the plot I showed you a minute ago had a T2 which decayed as lambda over V squared very rapidly for just storage. So T2 being decoherence time, the exponential envelope of that storage protocol. So here for a system with essentially the same mean parameters, but we have disorder in all of the parameters now, you get that T2 time extends exponentially in the system size. Okay. So finite size numerics, limited to things you can do with full integration. But you know, this is log linear and many orders of magnitude of this exponential growth in system size.
When you have an energy, right?
This is infinite temperature, so it's middle of the spectrum. Okay. I mean, it's actually what it, I mean, yeah, no, that's right. It's actually literally the trace fidelity, so it's infinite temperature average over initial conditions. So this is saying that whatever the initial conditions of the whole chain are, if you measure that operator, and then you wait, and then you measure it again, you will recover what it was projected into by the first measurement, basically for sure, up to a time scale which is growing exponentially in system size. It's a very coherent qubit, even at infinite temperature. Okay. So there we have storage. Okay. And what somehow is going on there is that the bulk excitations being localized aren't able to scatter, even though they're interacting. It's a little hard to pin down exactly where this is coming from. They aren't able to decohere the symmetry protected part of this qubit, or in the fermion language, you know, change the parity. That requires actually getting to the other end. So what's tricky about making that a fully sharp argument is that in the clean case, naively the same is true. It's not obvious why you can just get your fermions to pop off into the bulk. when you start building perturbation theory. But it definitely works. So you get order one in the infinite temperature case when it's clean, but it extends to exponential. Essentially, you have to tunnel to decohere that thing. You have to start talking to the other end of the chain. Okay, so then shuttling is harder. It already didn't work for the non-interacting chain. So the localization, if it's going to work, it has to do something a little bit different. Like it has to have some other role, but we already know, I've alluded to it, what it's doing somehow is it's localizing that Wigner string that's trying to escape during the dynamic ramp process. And that actually, we can already see in this is non-interacting, we can sort of check the intuition that that localization of the Wigner string modes, which get dragged across, allows the coherence to recover. So this is the same plot I showed you earlier where I said, oh, it doesn't work. I really should just pick a longer size so that this is just zero, because this is a finite size effect. It really should just be down here. But what's nice about this is the same everything. So same, okay, not quite everything, same mean parameters, mean couplings, same ramp times, same hold time, etc. But now with disorder in all the couplings, and same protocol, and you can see that all three of the boundary operators completely recover. Okay, and the time scale for this ramp here is set by essentially the local spectral gap, the local non-interacting gap. If we are protected by that, so essentially if the zero modes are protected, then that's good enough. The strings will also be protected. They don't disperse, and they come back when you ramp back. And that's what allows this correlation function to recover. Okay. Okay, so that worked in the non-interacting case, and I think this picture of localizing the string is useful for trying to understand what's going on here. It's hard to see how to make anything work, again, with interactions, but again, we can just look at it, and this is, again, numerical simulation and of the full shuttling protocol. In fact, with more steps here, we've ramped down not just two sites, but four sites. We move this boundary over quite a long way, hold, then come back. And this is this recovery to, I think, about 97 or 98% in this fully interacting simulation. So this is, belabor it, but basically it just works. You can shuttle this qubit, this boundary qubit, at infinite temperature with interactions on in the localized phase. You can push it over a number of sites, hold for a long time, and then push it back and measure your final qubit state, and it will just be in the same state that you started with. Okay. This didn't even begin to work in the clean case.
Can you justify this based on
I should have emphasized this, sorry. So this time scale here, I wasn't paying a lot of attention to them. This is actually fast. So, I mean, 6,000 doesn't look like a small number, but it's actually fast. This is two orders of magnitude faster than the T2 time for the just storage. So you can really do this quite rapidly compared to the time that this same system would just store the quantum information. You can move it around and bring it back. Okay. Anyway, sorry, what were you going to say?
If I take the model here, it didn't undo the conserved quantities, the Gaussian operator. Can I give a simple calculation to show that all this works out? I mean, if I assume that tau here have not the overlap with sigma z, with some undetermined coefficient, but let's say some number is less than one, but still non-zero. Can one do this calculation and justify that it has to work? Because you're calculating some.
No, so I would say for this, okay, so within the L-bit kind of picture, you mean?
Uh-huh.
Right, so if I assume that structure, that is enough to indeed argue that the storage protocol works?
This is a time-dependent Hamiltonian.
Yeah, this is a time-dependent Hamiltonian.
Right.
And so you would have to make some stronger assumption on how the L bits change as a function of changing these couplings and how that works. And so you can't just immediately generalize and say, oh, it works. It does work. So presumably that tells you something about how the L bits, if they're defined, are defined, and the ones that have this odd symmetry under the SVT symmetry, that's what would push these couplings away. So you could imagine having the storage, and it also has to work for the shuttling. But there's a step there which would be an additional assumption on the structure of the L bits as a function of coupling. Right? It's part of why it might be interesting to think through exactly what assumption you need to make, like how strong it is, but yeah, you can't directly do it. Okay, so, you know, boom. MBL to the rescue, ta-da! I can both store and shuttle quantum information encoded in these boundary qubits. They are extremely coherent in the presence of localization. And I can move them around despite the fact that the system is localized. That sounds counterintuitive when you just say it out loud, but it's not so crazy. And this is at infinite temperature for the system. So, okay, now just in the last minute or two, I'll just point to the quantum gates I put into the title. So what is this good for? Okay, so what we can do is drag the qubit around and store quantum information in it, so we can imagine it sort of points to an architecture where you have edge qubits at opposite ends of SPT regions, so on the domain walls. And if I drag a qubit over, of course, I enhance the interaction it has, which is usually exponentially small in this separation, with the opposite edge qubit. And so you can imagine kind of a wire architecture, which is move this edge in to do a gate and move it away to just hold the quantum information. And so that raises a question, does the interaction between the edge qubits lead to a gate? And again, you can analytically, in the non-interacting point, you can just derive the time evolution of these boundary modes. And this is it. But the main thing to take away from this is that for special times, where these sines and cosines are 1 and 0, you can essentially swap right and left. So the R's go to L's, and the L's go to R's. X and Z swap, but that's kind of just a labeling thing. But this P is a parity entanglement. This is essentially a Wigner strain. It's just a fermion parity of the intermediate region that this swap is going through. And so you could call this a P swap. I don't think I wrote it on the slide. That's what we called it, a P swap, because it's a parity entangled swap gate. Unfortunately, just by itself, that's not quantum computationally universal. And actually, that's generally true. We don't think that there is, just from the Hamiltonian dynamics of these interacting edge modes, a way to get a quantum computational universal gate, just these parity entangled swap gates. I won't go through it. In some sense, it's easy to rectify if you have an ancilla qubit. So if you imagine these are actually cold atoms and they have nuclear spin and you can use a nuclear spin, then you can have essentially two qubits attached here and two qubits attached here. And with that ancilla, it's easy to define a protocol that uses two P swaps, cancels the parity entanglement, and actually gives you universal quantum computation. So I won't put it in. But I think this is important to see, which is that the P swap gate really actually works in the sense that if you have these guys far apart, you can have an exponentially long coherence time. And then by ramping in order one times, times that are protected by a local gap, you can bring them close together. So you can move them as far as you want linearly in the distance you want. The time it takes is linear in the distance you want. And the time of oscillation gets exponentially shorter, faster, as you move them closer together. And so this is actually a scatter plot of us just checking numerically for, 30 different disorder realizations on as big a chain as we could, dragging the left edge qubit to further and further places in to get it closer to the far side, and plotting, scattering the total time we wasted ramping versus the time of the oscillation. Again, this is a log linear plot. And so all this is saying is that you actually can imagine, you know, sit this thing at a far enough apart that the coherence time is long, very long, exponentially long. And then you can spend order L time to bring them close together, allow them to interact, and then pull them apart again. And you can get a total gate time, which is just linear in the separation, essentially by getting them close enough together that this exponential matches the time you spend on the ramp. And it works. I mean, this was some numerical procedure which basically guaranteed that the fidelity of the net procedure was above 90 or 95% or something like that for each of these points. And so the fact that it looks like this is telling you that you have this exponential enhancement. All right. So that's my summary. You can get check marks down here. That is, you can use the boundary qubit at an SPT edge, even at infinite temperature, if you can localize the system. And you can do it not knowing very much, which is you can do it using naive operators, naive boundary operators, that are totally local, and they just extend and work. And, you know, this is Norm's kind of, his dream is to build wire networks of qubits and make full quantum computers and things like that. So I had to put it in. I'm not sure that this is really the best way to build a quantum computer, but we can have a discussion about that later. But the idea of, you know, that you can do this localization protected storage and then actually, you know, bring the gates together, bring them together by shuttling, have coherent interactions, and bring them apart again, actually does give you the basis for an architecture or platform for quantum computing. So, thank you.
Yeah. So, can you go back to the last slide? So with shuttling the, so if I need that, the second and the third row, the shuttling doesn't exist, it crosses. Mm-hmm. There the recovery is zero in the thermodynamic case.
Yeah.
In this case, in the disordered finite interacting case, it's non-zero. It's not like it's one, right? That's the statement? Or is it?
No, it's
perfect, you think? You
well,
think
no,
it's 97% or something.
Yeah, yeah. So it's order one. And the extent to which that's not one,
uh-huh.
So it can be very close to one. There's two things. You need to have a ramp time which is slow enough that it's adiabatic with respect to a local gap, which is an order one time, but you'd have to calibrate that in any particular system. That gives you an adiabaticity condition. But then you also have the problem that you don't know.
Technically, can you write it down? What is the adiabaticity condition?
Well,
there's another paper by Shivaji where. Okay.
No. Shivaji, okay.
That's a different question, actually.
Yeah, that's a different question.
Right. But here, can you...
So, there's... Yeah, so, what do I want to say? So there's... you have something which looks like this. And the question is, where does this get to? Right? Is it 1, less than 1, 0? Right? Okay. So, you need to ramp. This time has to be greater than... something, we don't have an exact analytic form, but something of order, what would be the, what we call the zero temperature gap. So if the localization length was roughly 1, then it really would be about the gap. Okay, so very short localization lengths. So this is order 1. And you have to be longer than that so that this ramp is adiabatic for the zero modes in our picture.
Much, much bigger than that.
Well,
doesn't matter.
This is a Landau-Zener problem. Maybe.
Yeah, it's like a Landau-Zener problem.
Okay.
If you are, okay, so that's one thing. But then the other thing is actually what Leon was more concerned about, which was how well do you know these operators? How well defined are they? And what are the overlaps with what you actually do? And so if you, that we didn't try to fix. So we just used the stupid operators that come from the integrable point. And that automatically basically gives you that you miss by a little bit. But that's also order one if you believe in L-bit style dressing. So you can't get above, you can't get recovery of that little bit.
So your statement is if I really use the L-bit, it'll be 100%.
That's what we think. But we haven't, and it's probably show, in the non-interacting case it might be showable, but in the general case, that's what we think. So this is a condition, but that also you have to get right. Now, that doesn't quite address the question of how well defined the high temperature thing is, but sort of it works here. So.
Sorry. How well do you understand how these things would be applied to an SU2 symmetric, like AKLT-like chain? Is there a model like that, which is, so you need something strongly disordered, so all the states are localized somehow.
Yeah.
I guess I'm a little bit confused by is the fact that these boundary states are supposed to have fractional representations, and so how do I really write down an operator which gives that?
I actually view this as a very close analog of the more AKLT style.
Okay, yeah. I'm not so familiar with this model. So
yeah.
This.
So,
So first of all, you have to maintain for every disorder, even the disordered Hamiltonian has to have the full Z2 cross Z2 symmetry.
Yeah. Correct. Yeah. That's true. And the operators that you then write down that will act on the edge qubit will not respect it.
Right.
They. That's why they work. Mm-hmm. That's why they're protected.
But all you need is to be an operator will do the job.
I think it does. Yeah. It has overlap with. Yeah, it definitely acts on it. Right. And the ordinary spin operators aren't SU2 symmetric. They change the spin.
Sure.
Yeah, for SU2 in Verneau, then model actually, because SU2, because in the bulk it has a. More than one dimensional representation. It means that the bulk state can have a very large spin.
Yeah, yeah. So whether you can.
It's actually bad, I think. So.
Those are probably bad. Whether you can. I think it's still an open question whether you can get MBL in a system with a continuous symmetry like SU2. So that's slightly different. That's actually part of why. So you can get Haldane from. As I think Haldane originally did, you can turn on SC squared, just go to the dihedral group. That's enough to protect the phase. That's the SPT that you need, or the SPG, which is Starwood preferred guest if you, anyway, sorry. Symmetry protecting group, dihedral group is good enough, right? And in fact, from the point of view of MBL, it may be that you can't do it with full SU2.
Is that because the excited states can't carry a high spin?
Yeah.
So there's a lot of energy.
Yeah. There's a bunch of arguments that basically say that won't work. Once the spins get big, if you're thinking of something like a real space agglomeration, once the spin gets big, you have a lot of degeneracy, and that means that it looks more classical. You can sort of get low frequencies out of it.
Yeah, I was trying to have a picture in my head of, for the usual kind of trivial many body localized state with no boundary spins, you've got to imagine that there's some unitary mapping to just a bunch of labeling the states by local Ising spin operators, right? Tweaking these different eigenstates is just changing value locally along. So here, I guess it's something similar. There's one Ising operator that corresponds to the boundary state, and then a bunch of others.
Yeah.
Is there something special then about the energy coupling of the boundary spin to the other spins in this kind of?
I think that the fact that the boundary spin, so presumably the labeling you just said, will have the property that changing that boundary spin is odd under the symmetry, and so you have to couple it to other qubits which are odd under the symmetry. And that's why in the MDL case, you really can't write couplings until you get all the way across the system. And then you can have bulk couplings. So you can have like coupling on left, coupling on right, bulk stuff. Other stuff in there, and that decoheres you. That's why it's not just a coherent rotation between the ends, it's a decoherence. Okay. But it has to get to the other end in that picture. And that's I think, what Tarun was alluding to, that you can see why storage works from that simple picture. But the shuttling is harder, and it probably isn't that much harder, but you do have to make a stronger assumption about how the L bits themselves evolve when you tune the couplings in order to argue that it still works. Right?
I have a question. So what if instead of having an SPT, you just had a wire that's in an MDL phase, and then your vacuum was actually just a gap insulator? Okay. So now there's nothing special on the edge, but I still kind of just attempt to address just the spin that's literally on the edge. Do you think roughly the same thing would work?
No, and it's related to what we just said, which is which is that in the MDL picture, you have to that edge spin would evolve into some dress spin, but it would talk to everybody nearby. And so it wouldn't be coherent for just the storage protocol. It would still die rapidly. Slower than it would in the clean system, but still rapidly, order one time. It doesn't have to talk to the other side of the system. Whereas the SPT one has to talk to the other special qubit at the other end of the system.
Oh, I see.
And that's why it gets a high order coupling.
Can you see this numerically, like you just did in the center? You can see that.
You see which numerically? You see which thing numerically?
Just what you just said. The T2 is always a magnitude different if you address this to the center.
Oh, actually, in the disordered phase? Actually, I'm not sure that we explicitly did that. We kind of, this I think is surprising to the point that we didn't check that the other case wouldn't work, actually. maybe Norm looked at it, but I don't know that we explicitly checked it. But it's, log growth of entanglement and all those things, none of that would work if it weren't the case, I guess, because they do talk on, they talk to their neighbors on order one time scales associated to it's not order one, it's how far away the neighbor is. But as soon as they talk to one enough, it decoheres the information locally.
Cool. Okay, thank you, Chris.